thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 27, posting on the 26th of March, 2021. I am Conal O'Moran. What a reaction to our item on our man, Dave Kerr, the guy who goes rock running because it's good for his business. By rock running, he means he runs under the freezing Irish Sea, just in his togs, carrying big boulders. Why does he do it? Listen to episode 26 to try to understand. I don't. But people are fascinated by it. He had over 6,000 views of his video so far. And you can see Dave's video of him running around under the ocean on our LinkedIn page, That Great Business Show. This week, sit back and listen to an hour plus of business positivity done in the Team GBS way, because we do business differently. That Great Business Show is brought to you by That Great Shaving Oil, De Facto. Buy it at defactoshave.com. Now, money is always top of mind in business, so we have found three alternative sources of finance that you'll be interested in. And then, to mix things up, we'll also tell you where to find creative geniuses to work on your business projects. As always, we're on the lookout for great businesses to feature on That Great Business Show, particularly women-led enterprises. If you are one or know one, get on to our website, thatgreatbusinessshow.com, for more information. And this is new, a message from Udras Nugatakhta. If you're looking for the perfect work-life balance, why not start your new business in one of Ireland's beautiful Gaeltacht locations? Udras Nugatakhta has created Ireland's biggest digital hub, GTEC, high-speed broadband-enabled workspaces just for you. Tosail Nua Igfanachlet, your new work-life awaits. Find out more at udras.ie. FIFO Capital may be a name you're not familiar with, but if your business needs a quick finance fix, maybe they should be on your phone's speed dial. Founded 16 years ago in New Zealand, it now claims to be a leading alternative financier. The business has been in Ireland since 2017, focusing primarily on invoice financing for SMEs. One of FIFO's biggest and possibly most attractive claims is that they don't do lock-in contracts. Your business might just need them the once and once only at a particular time in your business's life cycle.
That Great Business Show.
Patrice Butler is business partner with FIFO Capital and joins me now on That Great Business Show. Patrice,
Hi, Conal. You are
most welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Conal.
You're very welcome. Let's start with the very beginning. Invoice financing. What does that actually mean? Put English on that, as they used to say.
So for businesses that have invoices on their balance sheet, we turn them into cash. So it's unpaid invoices turned into cash immediately.
And why would you do that?
Because if you are, instead of waiting, say, 30, 60, maybe 90 days from your customers to get paid, we can pay you up to 90% immediately on the back of that invoice.
And you are different when I say you.
Yes.
FIFO is different because others lock you in for a contracted period.
Yes, yes.
But you'll take just one invoice.
Yes, yeah. So like that, we're happy to look at one invoices, many invoices, or even just a particular debtor from your debtor book. So we are very, very flexible. We will tailor a package just to suit your business's needs.
You know what I'm going to say next. If there's one debtor,
yes,
you know it's going to be the problem debtor.
No, because if it's a problem debtor, unfortunately, that ends up costing money to the client. And that's not what we want either. So it's in a client's best interest to give us the debtors that they know that it's not problem debtors that we're looking at. It's debtors that do actually pay on time. And it's about freeing up that cash flow immediately for that business.
Give me some examples of work that you have done or invoices that you have paid.
Yeah. So in a, like, typical examples would be we would have, say, plenty of construction clients that they would do work, say, for the likes of Lidl, Aldi, KFC, Insomnia. Their payment terms would be about 45 days. So our client would send us the invoice once the work is done, everything is approved and cleared, and we would release, say, up to 90% of the value of that invoice. That gives them the opportunity to move along, keep moving along with the business and investing in other projects, getting materials ready, you know, paying their staff, all of the day-to-day running expenses. But it gives them that opportunity to grow their business as well.
But you're back to this again because I'm hearing Lidl and Aldi and all these big names. They're quality names. They're great companies to be to owe you money.
Yes.
What about the other ones that maybe not so good?
Well, when we when a client comes to us, they will present, you know, just a raft of information that we will ask for. Nothing too strenuous, but just the general things of, you know, updated management accounts, etc. But we will also be looking at the strength of their debtors. So if it happens that, you know, there is a debtor on their books that maybe isn't so strong, we will discuss that all up front with the client. And, you know, in some instances, it's actually quite good for the client to actually know this as well. You know, that if a debtor doesn't appear to be that strong as what they may have thought. So we will do our due diligence in the background on those debtors, and we will come up with some solution. And it may be a case of let's get trade finance, you know, or let's get trade insurance, sorry, instead of, you know, for that particular debtor, which is doable as well.
If people who are coming to you are possibly in a rush to get the cash,
that
would be the norm, would it be?
Yeah. Well, the first phone call, everything is a rush. And then as things progress, it's not as immediate. But that's one of the things that FIFO Capital can do. As I said, there are, you know, tick in the box kind of things that we have to do as well. But we are very, very fast, very efficient, and we can turn things around within 2 to 3 days.
From the phone call.
From that phone call.
Patrice Butler, and she says, talk to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And 3 days later, how big would a typical invoice that you might pay be?
On average, you're looking at about 30,000.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that's 30, chunky 000. Money, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you do have competitors, and I know that you will not mention their name. I will. No. They have a different business model, don't they?
A lot of our competitors will only look at you if you're a relatively larger business, or that you have to be trading for, say, 2 years, or that you have to have a debtor book value of 250,000 in some cases.
That is big now.
Yeah.
Like, again, people listening to this podcast may be only starting off in business.
Yeah.
To imagine that you have outstanding bills for 250,000, that is like you've been on the road a long time at that stage.
Exactly, yeah. So that's where we come in. We will look at startup businesses as well. We are, you know, we're willing to help a lot of businesses, no matter whether they're at the startup stage, the growth phase, the mature stage, or, you know, so we're there to help those startup businesses because they can, and we will look at an invoice if it is worth, say, 5,000. We will look at that value of an invoice. It doesn't need to be, you know, a minimum amount. So we don't have any minimum requirements.
In the real world, you'd love to be a farmer.
I would call myself half a farmer, but...
How did you get into FIFO?
Well, I'm actually a qualified chartered accountant, and I was working. I did my my traineeship in Moore Stephens, Patrick McMyers in Limerick, and my now husband, when we were going out a long time ago, but he moved to Australia, and I was working with Moore Stephens doing my training contract, and he decided that he had to go get a job because there was no jobs in construction in Ireland at the time. So
I'm
going to
hold you there because at this point, when Peter Rice, who does the post-production here, is listening to this part, he should actually put in some gentle music because I know what's going to come next. Carry on. So your future husband is in Australia.
So he went to Australia. I was still in Limerick finishing my exams and doing out my training contract. And I asked my boss at the time if I could get a secondment to Perth because Moore Stephens actually happened to be in Perth as well. So it was perfect because I could literally get off the plane in Perth Airport on a Friday evening and start my job on Monday morning. Which I did. Everything worked out perfectly. Yeah, they were, in fairness, Moore Stephens were very good on both sides to make sure that actually happened. So it was great. So moved to Perth in 2012. And while I was actually working in Moore Stephens in Perth, a lady that I worked with, Kerry, she was telling me about her son who had just bought into this franchise business called FIFO Capital. She explained it to me what it was about and I understood the concept of it anyway. And then it wasn't until a few years later, you know, she told me that he was progressing well through the business. And it wasn't until a few years later that when I was actually working in an infrastructure company and I was a senior financial accountant with them and I was reviewing the payments. And when I saw the amount of invoices being paid to FIFO Capital, I realised, you know, this is an actual very, you know, it's a very successful business. And it just made me think, well, you know, what, and myself and my husband, we were always on the lookout to say, well, what works really well in Australia that we could bring back to make it work well in Ireland?
Love that idea.
So we were always on the lookout for, we had that many different ideas that half of them were probably a bit bammy anyway, but we decided that maybe this could be, so we did a lot of research, looked into it, and then spoke to, it was back in probably 2018, spoke to the master franchisor in Ireland at that time. And yeah, it's been kind of ongoing since then.
And you are based in Limerick.
Based in Limerick.
You cover the entire.
Yeah, so we have the franchise rights to, it's all over Republic of Ireland. Yeah.
So that brings you literally from Donegal down to Wexford, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Typically, how many businesses are you dealing with in a week?
Oh, within a week. Well, see, you'd have inquiries as well. Like we'd have a lot of, well, I suppose they're, you know, and in fairness, I would do the same thing. If, you know, my business, I would shop around. I would get as much information. And I suppose knowledge is key at the end of the day. You know, people want to know exactly what's out there, what's available, which is a great sign, because that was one of my fears when I was in Australia. You know, businesses in themselves were very open to everything. And one of my fears was, are Irish businesses open to everything? Are they willing to change, and or do they just want to stick with their banks? Because if they did, then that would limit, you know, the amount of businesses that we would be able to help as well.
And what did you find?
So, yes, surprisingly, there's definitely, well, when I say surprising, some days I'm like, okay, wow, like that's great. People do understand it. They know it. And then other days, a lot of people, unfortunately, think that it's just suiting big businesses. And I do think that maybe our banks are to blame for that, because, they do have that market share of the large businesses. But as we know, like those micro businesses, the small to medium sized enterprises, they are the backbone of the economy, and they tend to be forgotten about, as far as I can see, in terms of invoice financing. They're not, you know, helped in the way that they should be. And that's what we're basically there to do. We're there to fill that gap.
There was, back in the day, now going way back, it used to be kind of almost standard, the invoice financing was done. Then it went out of fashion. And one of the reasons it may have gone out of fashion is it was very expensive.
Yeah, no, it's very competitive. Like, we're very competitive with our rates as well.
Go on, give out the ad. How much does it cost? Say you have an invoice. Remember the one you mentioned, the 30,000?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I come along to you, I need the 30 grand quick.
Yes.
So how much is that going to cost me to deal with you and get my 30 grand immediately?
Yes. Well, it does depend on various factors. And one of the biggest factors that it does depend on is the industry that you're in and the strength of your debtor. So if you're in a typically, I suppose, risky industry, and when I say risky, to us that would kind of be, okay, would it be construction? You know, like, stuff that needs progress claims, you know, would they get to a certain point in time? So they're typically what we would consider the more riskier clients. And then the less riskier clients are the ones like pharmaceuticals and, you know, the usual recruitment.
So let's start with the easy ones. So the pharmaceutical or pharmacy clients.
Yeah.
Typically, how much would that 30 grand cost them to get paid immediately?
Well, you're looking at somewhere between kind of 3.5-4%.
Okay.
That's where you're looking at, for the invoice.
And that is also comes with a guaranteed payment. Now, what happens if somebody reneges on the invoice for whatever reason, might be circumstances, what happens then?
Yeah, so with that, if we say in most instances, the customer, the client anyway, they want to have the trade insurance in place, so we can help facilitate that as well, or else they can do it themselves, it's up to them. But if the debtor fails to pay, then it comes back onto the insurance and the insurance then pays. If it is a case of that there is no trade insurance in place, which is unlikely anyway, it does fall back on the customer to pay.
Okay.
So the customer has to pay. And we've never come across it yet, thank God. But in practical terms, what would actually happen is the customer would say, I have another invoice to give you. You know, so it would be a similar invoice, 30 grand, and it would be due in 2 weeks, and we'd get paid in 2 weeks anyway. Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, that was the easy one, because that's the pharmacy one.
Yes.
Let's get into your construction one or some of the other. Now, remember, you say nice things about it because your husband is in construction.
Yes. That is just an example. But we would be looking more in the range of kind of the 5-5.5% than if it was the riskier ones.
Yeah. Does it go much beyond that?
No. No.
Now you're allowed to diss the opposition. What would they charge? They who will not be named.
I know that they have a rate per annum, so that you have to pay that regardless of how much you use the facility.
And
then
that's
I know
big, big one for you, that you don't do that.
That we don't do that,
I'll say it again, you will do the one-off invoice.
Yeah, we will do the one-off invoice. And I suppose just to make a point on that as well, is that a lot of the inquiries that we have been getting are businesses who are already with our competitors. And when they're talking to us, they just want to know exactly what we offer. I suppose because they almost think it's too good to be true, which it isn't. I can guarantee you that. But they say, we have been paying for this facility every single month. And in particular, during a pandemic, it is eating into their cash flow. It's actually doing the opposite to what it should be doing. It's eating into their cash flow. And they don't have, they don't even have a business at the minute. You know, they're probably surviving on government supplements or, that's the reality of it. And a lot of the time, the reaction I get is, I wish I had known about you before I signed up to this contract. So it's for FIFO Capital. It's just to let people know that we are out there and we don't have lock-in contracts.
That's why we love bringing these little nuggets to our listeners. Now, if in a better world, the government, I think, is trying to pay its invoices in 2 weeks or something like that. You mentioned some people who are out at 45. We know people go to 60 and even 90 days. If the government ever did anything about that, kicked ass as they could and they should, would that be the end of your business? Because people would be paying their invoices in good time.
Well, I suppose it would have an effect on it because, that's natural. If people are going to be getting paid quicker and making, but I personally can't see that. So
my point is, be sure not to give out too much about the farming business. That's your backstop. Those cattle.
Yeah. I'll get into it someday.
How big is FIFO here in the Republic now?
There's a master franchise. They're for support,
which is owned by somebody
training
up in Northern Ireland. Is that
in
right?
Northern Ireland, correct? Okay. Yeah. And then there's a franchise in Dublin, Eamon Tuffy, and then there's another guy in the north, Trevor Harris. So they're
your
working
name
away
them,
in it.
But of course, they can all come to you if they want.
We all have a very good working relationship.
But you don't
we're
have
a team almost, but yet we're completely separate businesses.
But you also don't have designated areas, do you?
No, we don't. Like, we can operate all over Ireland. Like, that's our, franchise right. But, if I would knock on the door of somebody who was basically living right beside Eamon, for example, that wouldn't be. And he and vice versa, like the same would go. He wouldn't be coming down around Munster and knocking on doors.
Can you sublet your franchise? Can you grow the business any, or is it just going to be you?
No, well, in the short term, it's definitely just going to be me. In the longer term, I do hope that we will be able to take on more people. And when I say we, like my husband, he's not directly, helping me every day with the work side of things, but he is there when, decisions need to be made or I need to talk to somebody. Like, he is there for that as well. So when I say
but
we, I treat
free.
It as... He comes free.
But
well,
don't even think of paying him.
I wouldn't say that. Farming is an expensive hobby, so...
So if anybody wants to find you, they will find you where?
They will find me at patrice.butler@fifocapital.ie. And on our website as well, fifocapital.ie. If they go into the business partners, I'm there and they can call me and have a chat.
Absolutely approachable.
Yes, I am. I like to think I am anyway.
And for a chat, that's the one thing that you might talk the hind leg off them, would they?
Well, I do tend to have very good relationships, I have to say, with my clients. Even during the pandemic, January was one of the hardest months because, there was no business really happening and everyone was so uncertain. But yet I was getting calls from my clients and I could be spending 40 minutes just chatting, because sometimes, my husband would just say like, oh, was that your business or whatever? And I say, well, yeah, but no, that we'd just be chatting.
That
like,
is
I have
business,
a good,
though. You have to.
Yeah, no, and I enjoy hearing
and
all their
January,
stories.
That was January, which was slow, but February.
Yeah, no, February, March is definitely a pick up. There's definitely more hope. A lot of people, I think January just, it was so unknown, uncertain. Nobody wanted to even take on new staff, like in December, they were all talking about growing their business. And then in January, it was, no, no, we better not. So February is back to that. February, March was definitely more positive. So I'm hoping April is, and we're getting busier every day. So we can see that ourselves and even the number of inquiries coming through. And a lot of businesses actually ringing about our facility because they want to grow and expand. You know, they want to get new product lines. They want to say, there was one guy, he wanted to just invest in a digger, but he didn't want a bank loan. You know, he just wanted to use. And that's the thing, I suppose, a lot of businesses think, I want to buy something new, I need to go to the bank and get a loan. We say, no, look at what you have on your balance sheet at the minute. You have a really good asset there. It's your debtor. It just needs to turn into cash so that you, instead of waiting your 60 days, you can get your digger, you can be working with it and making money off it. It's perfect.
You are an exceptionally good salesperson.
For an accountant, you mean?
I love accountants. Patrice Butler of, don't call her FIFO, it's FIFO, FIFOCapital. Yes.
.ie.
Sorry, you want to say one more thing?
I just wanted to say as well that FIFO Capital, we are always on the lookout as well for investors. So one of the things is, so like FIFO Capital is the platform that supports us, but they are always on the lookout for new investors. So at the minute, you know, I know that the banks are, you know, it's practically non-existent what interest rate you would get. So it is a good opportunity for people if they do want to invest their money, this is how they could do it.
And how do they do it?
So, well, look, there's, they basically can make contact with us at the start. We get agreements signed up. They can pick, choose they want, the amount they want to invest
in. Just kind of matched. Is there, if I give you, say, 10,000, what's the minimum investment?
There's no minimum investment.
Okay, I'll give you 10,000 quid. Yeah. What happens?
Yeah. So there's two options. You can either be a silent investor or else you can be an active investor. If you want to be a silent investor and say, Patrice, here is 10,000, you can invest it in, and you can specify, I want to invest it in insure deals only. I don't want to go near construction or whatever you deem to be risky. So you can pick what you want to insure it. So you basically get a return for your money based on your appetite for risk.
That's really interesting.
Yes.
What kind of return?
Well, you're looking at somewhere between probably 8 to 15% per annum.
That's all right.
That's all right in comparison to zero.
It's like they're charging you.
Your bank. Yeah.
They're charging you now.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah.
Don't get me going on the
So that was just one thing that anybody, you know, who is interested in investing, that's just, it's another route to take.
Very, very interesting. Can you tell me one last thing? Hire in a heartbeat. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Yes. Well, besides...
Don't say your husband.
No, no. Well, I have to, but no. Family members, because I think when you're dealing with something like money, and I'm very close to, you know, like my mom, my sister, dad, your brother, I'm very, very close to my family and I trust them with anything. And I think you need to have that level of trust. So I definitely hire any of them in a heartbeat. But one of the, one of your guests actually there a few weeks ago was Amy Connolly.
Yes.
And I have followed Amy on Instagram, Facebook for, I'd say the last, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years more, before she ever even had her proper business set up. And she was just, she's a very similar work ethic to myself. You know, that everything is just go, go, go. If she's 10 minutes to spare, she'll make use out of it. She'll do a workout or she'll do something just to make use out of her 10 minutes. And I just resonate a lot with her. And I think if I was working with her, I'd actually get on quite well with her. And that's very important to me, that I'd have a good working friendly relationship with somebody, but that they have similar characteristics to myself. So I think she's brilliant.
Well, having met with her, she is incredible.
Yeah, yeah, I have.
Such a nice person.
Yeah, because when I moved home from Australia there last year, you know, and I suppose when you move home, you think, oh, I'm going to be going to all these lovely events with my mother and my sister that I've missed out on for the last, you know, 8 years. And my sister actually bought us tickets to go and see one of Amy's masterclasses. So that was last January. So there was one event we got in before lockdown and it was absolutely lovely.
Lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's
so they're
a
all
nice
converted.
Recommendation. We'll pass on the message to the lovely Amy Connolly.
Thank you.
Patrice Butler, thank you very much for joining
us
on That Great Business Show.
Thanks very much.
You're listening to That Great Business Show. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
I did say we had a bit of an alternative finance theme this week, so here's another early stage financier. Kilkenny based Onate has a very specific business. It provides bridging finance. But before you get excited and think the home loan bridging financiers are back in town, it's a no. Onaid is purely business to business, and even then, they only want to know you if you have a track record and some very specific types of residential bridging loan requirements. Despite this, since January, they say they've loaned over 10 million euro, so they are very much open for business. Onaid's founder is Dan Gandesha, a successful entrepreneur from London, now living with his family in Kilkenny. Dan, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, Con.
How did you end up in Kilkenny?
My wife. I think a common story. So we met in London, two young kids, and when they were 1 and 3, she said, I think it would be a good time to move back home to Kilkenny. And in fairness, it's been fantastic. Actually, it's a great place to live.
Putney boy, you.
That's right. We were in Putney. We met in Putney and all around Southwest London for 12 years or so prior to that. But, being back with the kids having their cousins around and the quality of life in Kilkenny, it's been fantastic. And it's an easy hop up to Dublin. So it's a great spot, actually.
And a massive change from Putney.
Yeah,
even
sure
though Putney's
is.
Interesting. You and your two co-founders have a huge background in startups.
That's right, yes. So there's three of us involved. A chap called Christian Faes, who co-founded a very similar business in the UK called LendInvest. And they've done 3.5 billion of similar bridge lending. They started out at a time when it was really a small market, analogous time to launch, just off the back of the global financial crisis. We're off the back of some turbulence with COVID. And they've become a really large developed lender there. Another individual, Will Neal, who's a serial entrepreneur, really. He's started a bunch of businesses, one of which just IPO'd a couple of months ago, Phonics. So if you're watching Comic Relief and they ask you to text in and the charge goes on your mobile, it's likely those guys that power it. And my background, I founded a fintech in London called Property Partner that allows people to go onto this platform and buy a piece of a property, earn an income and sell when they want to. And we bought 1,000 properties across the UK as part of that. So after I sold a chunk of that business and relocated to Ireland, with my young family, the three of us got chatting, you know, what we might we want to work on. And we just kept coming back to bridge lending, an area that we were really excited about.
But all three of you, and I love this, you don't actually need to inflict this on yourself. Why start again?
Oh, absolutely. That's a really good question. It's for the fun of it. I mean, you know, building a business is fun. Taking something that wasn't there and creating something new is a really enjoyable experience. And for me, you know, the personal growth is learning from a leadership style and building a business that we're very proud of and that has a strong culture running through it. And, you know, every day I wake up and enjoy what I do. You know, I'm working with smart people. I'm able to do it a lot of the time remotely. So I get to see my kids and we structured the business in a way that's, you know, very much for the long term, which is something I'm very passionate about as well.
Now, you are not a bridging finance house, as I might have thought, or as they used to be, because they don't exist anymore. You have a very specific focus.
That's right. So our borrowers are typically property entrepreneurs or professional property investors. So to unpack that a little bit, they will usually be developers, builders, people that have conducted social housing projects in the past. So our lending really allows them to take a property, execute the purchase really quickly. So there's usually a time element to this. There's usually some sort of complexity as well. And then we bridge that gap, so that the clue's in the name, bridge the gap to either sale of that property or refinance with longer term, cheaper capital. So a great example of that would be a borrower that we've approved recently, we're working through on, and they're buying 12 flats. The building's vacant currently down in Cork. And those flats are being repositioned for a social housing contract, and then the property will be sold. So, you know, that has some risk because those social housing contracts are never watertight. You know, it's done on a promise, and you need the track record to be able to deliver on that. But as a niche lender, we can look at that and say, look, we see the track record of that prospective borrower. We understand what needs to be done, and we're totally comfortable.
Now, you have, or one of your partners has been very successful in the UK with this. Is it a different market, different laws, different ways of operating?
It's very similar in the sense that it's in the unregulated lending space, actually, in the sense that it's not consumer lending. It's B2B, as you said at the outset. So,
and does that mean that you are unregulated, as in there's no central bank or anybody watching you?
there are elements of regulation for around anti-money laundering and those sorts of things, but not regulated in the traditional sense that you would be for a traditional consumer loan. So our borrowers are always an SPV, a limited company, or it could be a trading business, a property developer, for example. So even if an individual did come to us and they conduct their trade being investment in properties, they would typically, or via their accountant, set up an SPV, which would be
special purpose vehicle.
Yeah, limited Irish limited company. That's all it means, yeah.
And typically, how long are they borrowing the money for?
So at Ownate, we specialise in short-term loans. So these are loans up to 2 years, but they can be repaid back after 90 days without penalty. So typically, this is not cheap finance. So typically, someone's coming in with a view to rolling off of it within 6 months or so, but they've got the flexibility to go longer if they choose.
And you said it wasn't cheap.
Yeah, absolutely. And we make no... we're very transparent with that, if you like, in the sense that it's the ballpark market for this is around 1% per month. And it costs that level because it's very fast, it's very flexible, and there's often complexity there. So it really is to bridge a gap to longer term, cheaper financing. So a classic example is that if a property was being bought, a vacant building, perhaps with lots of residential units in it, that's fine if it's income generating and it's got tenants. There will be lots of lenders that are willing to lend against that. But if it's empty and it's not capable of being occupied today because there are some issues there that need to be resolved, there aren't many lenders. So, in one sense, the Irish housing market, if you like, has a challenge in that there are lots of these buildings out there that have issues, title issues or quirks or need some works. And there's a real shortage of property. And there are financing solutions that are needed to just bridge that gap. And it's quite a short gap quite often, 3 months, 6 months, to allow the asset to be worked on and resolved and another lender to come in.
And I did say at the very beginning that you are looking for people with a track record. So wannabes you don't want to hear from.
No, this is not amateur property investor territory. But equally...
A lot of people in Ireland thought they were superior property developers back until 2008.
Yes, yeah. I wasn't here, but I've certainly heard. And the team are very experienced.
We knew an awful lot about Bulgarian property, for example.
No, we're certainly not in that space. And it's worth mentioning that the team that we've built in Ireland have been in this industry for 35, 40 years between the two of them, the initial hires there. So they've really been through that cycle. But also, we're not a property development lender. So we don't lend against ground-up developments. Typically, the asset's already there. There might be some light refurbishment works, but these are professional investors. The area where there are less professional counterparties, I guess, is that a debt settlement. So there might be a buy-to-let landlord that's had a meaningful portfolio. The banks moved in, took ownership of that, then sold the assets to a vulture fund in the US, a common story here in Ireland. And the original owner of that asset, they know it really well. They know the problems that need to be resolved. And often the vulture fund will end up offering that individual the chance to buy those assets back.
I'm sure they were never meant to do that, but I know what happens, all right.
Yeah. It happens every day, and it totally makes sense, for that to happen. But the traditional banks can't really lend against that. And again, there'll be tight time deadlines. They'll often say it's 28 days to complete. So someone will come to us and say, look, I need to get this done in 28 days. I'll go away and get longer term finance afterwards, and we can step in and provide that. And that introduction to Ownate usually comes through accountants or solicitors or those kinds of folk.
Yeah, that's a good question about the introductions, because I'm still thinking, man comes or woman comes to you looking for the cash. Can they really turn anything around in this country in property in 28 days?
I mean, from our perspective, yeah, absolutely. From our perspective as a lender, we can do a loan in a weekend. And that's obviously very different to the pillar banks. And
is that because you're drawing on your own resources, or?
Yeah, all of our decision making is in-house. Our legal counsel are very experienced in these sorts of loans. So there is a caveat here. We need to have the information on the property in order to turn a loan around that quickly. But often when a property is being bought in auction, for example, the pack is there. It is what it is. And we need to take a view as a lender. Are we comfortable on that? And typically we can get comfortable on a lot of things that the pillar banks wouldn't, because we're in this niche. We live it, we breathe it. By contrast, the pillar banks are really geared up for the turn the cog, mainstream, simple lending of owner-occupier houses.
We love hearing from the outside about how we do things differently in Ireland. So tell me about the property market that you see. Could we, should we do something different to get the housing market moving properly? The latest, I don't know whether you take an interest in this, but the latest wheeze from the government is to give equity, give cash for equity in a house, which is only going to drive prices higher. Everybody says it, but they're still driving it through now.
Yeah,
discuss.
I do think that shared ownership is can be like crack cocaine in the sense that it is difficult to get off once one goes on it. I'm not speaking from experience, I must say, but it's what I've heard. And it can push up prices. So it only really makes sense if there are real supply side initiatives, and those need to be nailed first. If you don't have the supply and you boost demand, then prices are just going to go up. So what do we need in Ireland that can help? Really, I think it's supporting property developers. You know, for example, underwriting their loans.
You know what? You may as well be talking about, you know, boiling babies. Supporting property developers in this country ain't going to happen for a while.
No.
There's a little bit of legacy there.
Those with a track record, those that know what they're doing, you know, and maybe sharing some of that risk with the private sector as well, so that there is a risk sharing. But ultimately, we need developers to build more houses. And when they're concerned that they won't be able to cover their costs, I mean, for example, outside of Dublin, you know, if you look across Ireland, in a lot of places, it's hard to buy a piece of land and build the property and be certain you're actually going to make some money at the end of the day. And there's a reasonable chance that something will go wrong, it will take longer, and you might even lose money. So in that situation, we need to create extra incentives. And I think the things that the government are doing really well are around social housing, for example, and that's, you know, creating a lot of attention and driving a lot of activity, which is excellent.
How big a market have you got in mind for Onate?
Yeah, it's a very niche market. So we think it's around 200 million of lending a year.
So you've done 10 thus far, and you've only just started. So you're going to run out of runway very soon.
Yeah, so we've approved 10 million of loans. So some of those are still working their way through the pipe, obviously. It is a niche market. And so 200 million a year, to put that into context, compares to around 9 billion a year in the long-term mortgage market. So it's, you know, one in 500 by comparison. So it's very niche. But equally, it's an area that a small specialized company that lives and breathes this niche can own a large proportion of, and it makes sense. But, you know, over time, we can add other products to our lineup and other territories. But that's not something that we're focusing on right now. It's all about Irish residential investment, bridge lending. And these are small loans as well. You know, they're typically less than €1 million. Over time, we'll go up to €2 million, but we're really focusing on that smaller end of the market. And, you know, from my experience, Christian Wills is building other businesses. You know, a small niche is actually a really good place to start because you can do a fantastic job.
And typical in Ireland as well, you will find out that the banks will come and try to kick you around the place. Have you haven't seen sight or sound of them yet, have you?
No, I really think that this product, if you think about the professional property investor bridge lending product, 200 million a year, really isn't something that makes sense for the banks. You know, to train up their staff at branch level to cater to a product that's one in every 500.
Branches, really, that's something that's disappeared as well, yeah.
That's true, even in call centres, absolutely.
Yeah. And so anybody else who might be competing with you?
Yeah, there's an alternative lending market, and actually it's a market where there's a lot of collaboration on one of your past shows with Link, for example, where you talk about businesses working together. I think this industry...
Patrick Buckley, great guy.
That's right. And, you know, it's an industry where lenders will work together. So our exit will often be another lender. So that's, you know, important that we're able to talk to each other, and we'll often refer business. So John Ring, our origination guy, if he gets a loan that comes in that isn't for us, he'll quite often pick up the phone and pass it on to another alternative lender that it does suit, and vice versa.
We have a thing called the ask. You are allowed to ask Team GBS for help. What help would you like from them?
Well, no, I think just being able to give a shout out, as we are now, that you know, that we're here, that we're here for the long term. We're building a brand that you know, is predicated on giving people a quick answer, whether it's a yes or a no, and always following through on our word is help enough, and we're very much happy with that. And, you know, what we're doing here is you know, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, we're saying that we're here for the long term. We're saying we're going to follow through on our word, and really that only gets proven out over many years of doing so. But, you know, this appearing here and having this conversation is all part of that exercise.
Great. Final question. Hire in a heartbeat. Who would you like on your team at Onate?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm a bit of a motorsports fanatic. I know you love anything with an engine yourself, Connell. But Toto Wolff, the team principal at Mercedes, is someone that I've really admired because of he's managed to crack that culture in Formula One. It's normally, you know, any driver that succeeds, it's down to my talent, and anyone that fails, it's down to the terrible team and the terrible car they gave me. And that can be really toxic in business. And, you know, being held to have that culture where it's a no-blame culture and we win or lose as a team is something that we're very much trying to emulate at Property Partner. So having Toto at the end of the phone as a coach would be awesome.
If you do get him, and we will try our best to link you up with him, make sure that I get somewhere into the pits for one of the races. I'd love that. Their cars are looking delightful at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they sure are. Yeah, I'll definitely do that.
Sad little man that I am that I actually get excited by looking at cars, but there you go. That is Dan Gandesha of One. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you.
Conobio at That Great Business Show.
Remember, if you're looking for the perfect work-life balance, why not start your new business in one of Ireland's beautiful Gaeltacht locations? Udrost na Gaeltachta has created Ireland's biggest digital hub, G-Tech, high-speed broadband-enabled workspaces just for you. Tosail nua ig fanacht leat. Your new work life awaits. Find out more at udros.ie.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show.
That Great Business Show.
Now, we highlighted the guys from COVID Interns on episode 19 of That Great Business Show. They're the company that finds you interns for your business, mainly young people who are locked up due to COVID, but who are mad keen to get to work. We've used the service ourselves. It works and it's great. So, on this episode 27 of That Great Business Show, we're bringing you another great idea. It's called the Indie List. There's no end of creative talent in Ireland, but it seems that finding the right person with the right skills, with the right availability, is a challenge. And that's why you check out the Indie List, where you can find experienced freelance people working in strategy, in creativity, in e-commerce, and in project management. Una Herlihy is co-founder of the Indie List, and she joins me on That Great Business Show. Welcome, Una.
Hi, Connell. Thank you for having me.
The Indie List, where did the idea come from?
Oh, my God. Well, there was a hammock involved. I'm sure there was a bottle of beer involved.
You weren't on one of those nightclubs in Leeson Street where that woman fell off the...
No, that was a swing, wasn't it? Yeah. No, I live in Kilkenny, so... By the way, this is probably the first time I've been outside my 5K since about September. So I feel like I'm, you know, off to a wedding or something. I'm so excited to be here.
But we are COVID compliant.
Absolutely. So I, like the rest of the world, on the 12th of March last year, my pipeline fell off a cliff. I worked for myself for the last 15 years.
Doing what?
As an intermediary between clients and their agencies. So essentially I was out trying to kind of form partnerships between big companies and their advertising, you know, their sort of marketing services firms. And I was doing that for about 15 years. And this year, 2020, I decided I wanted to take some time off to really decide what I wanted to do with, you know, for the next 10 years of my career. And I took some time off and went back to work on the 12th of March. And I was sitting in a meeting in Dublin.
Yeah,
and I got a text.
Back, you come back to work to nothing.
I got a text from my son's school to say, can you come and collect your son? It's lockdown. So literally the next day, everything just fell off a cliff.
Real life, eh?
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't kind of freak out too much because I'd been through boom and bust before and I knew it would find a level.
We all have.
Yeah, exactly. So the first thing I did was I bought a greenhouse and I started growing vegetables.
I'm sure we'll get onto the Indie List eventually.
Oh, yeah, exactly, at some stage. It's a long story. How long have we got?
Your greenhouse. What were you growing in the greenhouse, eh?
It was all very kosher. So anyway, I kind of looked at it as an opportunity to, you know, sort of see what was going to emerge from this, because even though it was very disruptive and a world of pain for so many people, I was pretty sure that there was going to be a massive amount of innovation that was going to come out of it. And, you know, that sort of excited the anarchist in me. And but I didn't think it would come from me, you know. So when the lockdown started, I had a lot of people contacting me, freelancers, people who work for themselves like me. And they were struggling, and they were, you know, a lot of them were very worried, very concerned about what was going to happen. And I always had a pretty good network. I was always good at networking. I was always pretty good at networking where the money was. So, you know, I said, well, look, you know, if I can help out, I'll help out. And I guess I was really inspired by what was going on in the world around me in terms of how people were pulling together, you know, frontline workers, et cetera, et cetera. And I just felt really powerless because I had all of this experience, but I really could do nothing. I felt I could do nothing with it. So back to the hammock, Maybank holiday weekend, I'm lying there going, there must be something I can do. And I decided to put a post up on LinkedIn, just offering to help out any solopreneurs, freelancers, sole traders, whatever, and put them in touch with people who are looking for short-term gap to fill. And I went to bed that night and I woke up the next morning and I thought, holy mother of God, what have I done? Because overnight I had probably about 100 messages in my LinkedIn.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
And I'm a big, big fan of LinkedIn. Yeah. The more I use it, a bit clunky, but my yeah, it's God, great. It's a great network.
It's great, yeah. So I sort of thought, right, I've offered to help, now I have to. So I spent, you know, I had to leave the vegetables to themselves and the greenhouse.
The vegetables.
You get me a bad reputation here, Connell.
Worse.
Worse reputation. So I basically kind of found myself, you know, not being busy at all, to back at my desk sort of 7-8 hours a day and trying to pull together this list. It was actually so lo-fi. It was an Excel spreadsheet. It was just so basic. And then my great friend, Peter McPartlin.
I think I know
you,
Peter.
You might know that name. Yeah, so
my
Peter.
Former boss.
Really? Oh, yes,
and
of course,
lovely,
St. David.
Lovely, nicest, lovely man.
Yeah, nicest man in the world. Yeah. But we won't tell him that. And so he contacted me and he said, Una, I think you're onto something here. And we had a few chats about it. And then I kind of said, Peter, look, this is probably a really bad idea. It's probably going to go nowhere. There's probably very little money in it. We'd probably drive each other crazy. And he said, okay, I'm in. So we decided then that we were going to...
He was at the vegetable patch as well, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. So we launched then the Indie List on the 4th of July, Independence Day, boom, boom. And we launched it as an online marketplace for freelancers to find work, but also to network, to collaborate, and to feel part of a like-minded community.
Now, hard question. Is it necessary? Everybody in Ireland knows somebody. And, you know, if you need somebody, you'll say, Una, tell us who would you recommend for, I don't know, say, graphic design?
Yeah. Well, you know, it sounds easy, but it's actually not, because I think the whole marketing services world has just moved on so much. The rate and the pace of change is just incredible. And it's really, really hard to keep you know, at pace with all of that change. There are, like in our industry, you have clients on the one side and you've got agencies on the other side. And then you've got this massive pool of talent that is kind of coming out of companies for one reason or another, choosing to kind of take the freelance route because of a complete lifestyle choice. And then other people actually returning to Ireland who have no network and who have amazing talent, like unbelievable experience. And they're kind of widely unknown here. So when people come to the Indie List, they're basically coming to a place where both myself and Peter, who are very experienced in this industry, you know, me for 30 years, Peter for 40 years. And so combined, we operate in a very small market where we know an awful lot of people. We're very experienced in really trying to understand what client needs are beyond the obvious. Some clients will come to us and they'll say, I'm looking for X. But when we kind of ask a lot of sort of hopefully searing questions about that, we'll be able to go back and say, I think you need Y.
Well, let us talk me through an example of somebody that you did do. You don't have to name them, but something that a project that you did work on successfully.
Oh my gosh, there's so many actually.
Are there really? Yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
there are. Well, first of all, we've got now 500 people signed up on the Indie List.
Good.
We've put about 140 people into jobs. That's incredible. We're only 9 months old. So if we were a child, we wouldn't even be standing up straight. And look, we're making lots of mistakes as we go, but that's fine because we're able to kind of correct them on
all
the fly.
What were those mistakes? We really do ask those questions.
Yeah, well, one of the biggest mistakes was our commercial model. You know, we sort of felt guilty about
Charging
for our time because quite honestly, this is what myself and Peter have probably been doing all of our careers. You know, people will ring us up and say, I need somebody to do X. And we're able to say, you know what, I have the very person for you.
Yeah.
And like, you know, people say to us, you know, kind of what gets you out of bed in the morning? And it genuinely is when somebody comes to us with a problem and we're able to kind of really understand the nature of that problem and then go, I'm so excited to tell you that I actually know the exact person who can fix that problem for mm-hmm. you. And I know that they're available because I was only talking to them yesterday because both myself and Peter, you know, we're talkers,
yuck.
You know, we yak, yeah. And or natterers, as somebody else called me there recently. Perfect example of somebody who used the Indie List. I won't kind of give their name because
that's
it's
okay.
probably too sensitive,
right.
but... World changed on the 12th of March. We've already discussed that. And businesses that work in the retail environment were probably completely snookered if they didn't have an e-commerce offering. We had one particular Irish business that sold an exclusively Irish product. Their routes to market were in places like Dublin Airport, in shops like the Kilkenny Shop, Larney Woolen Mills, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, their business just dried up. Their big market was in the US and all of a sudden, you know, no travellers coming to Ireland. So they had to completely, that great word, pivot their business.
We love a pivot
yeah,
here.
Yeah, exactly. And they came to us as a source of people who would have expertise in the whole area of e-commerce project management. We were able to put somebody into that role within a couple of days. And this particular individual was then able to go in, sort of assess what needed to be done, and then pull from more resources within the Indie List to pull together a kind of a team to make this happen. And they basically went from, you know, pulling their hair out in June to September, launching a fully fledged e-commerce website that is now flying.
Now, you said, and you admitted that you had made a big mistake about the commercial model.
Yeah.
You are now charging. So how, what are, talk me through the model.
Yeah.
As somebody
yeah.
comes along and says, I want to be on your list. Does that cost?
No. So anyone can join up on the Indie List.
Anybody?
Anyone can join up.
So how do you know who they are?
Well, we apply a kind of a very rigorous screening of that individual. So anyone can sign up, but not everyone will get work.
Ah, okay.
So you have to be like the best of the best to get work from the Indie List. Because,
I know that one.
Yeah, because you see, you know, we're building a brand here, the Indie List. That's all fine. But it's my reputation, it's Peter's reputation that's on the line because people are coming to us because they know us and they know what we can do and they trust us because we've worked for a long time in this industry, as I've glossed over before. So, you know, we're looking for people who are highly experienced, endorsed within the industry. If we don't know them, we're probably one step removed from them. So we can find out very, very quickly how good they are, you know, where maybe they're slightly exposed. And are we happy to put our reputation on the line to recommend them for a particular piece of work? And so far, all of the people that we've put into work have delivered huge value. And we've had repeat business from, you know, so many of the customers that we've been dealing with.
So the commercial model. So I'm on your list.
Yeah. So you can sign up for free. There's no charge
okay.
to you.
So who pays?
The customer who comes to us looking for talent will pay. And how we started off, first of all, was we just had a straightforward commission model. So 10% on top of the freelancer's fee. We're not a recruitment agency, but if you kind of compare that to recruitment, it's, you know,
they take a year's salary or 2 years
yeah,
salary
yeah, yeah.
or
yeah, exactly. Now most of our people are just going in for short periods of time. Mm-hmm. But what the one mistake that we had in the very beginning was not getting commitment up front from customers. So we had people coming to us saying, oh, I want a social media strategist and I need them to be X, Y, and Z and I want them to start on Monday and they can only charge me whatever. So we would drop everything, we would start looking, we'd spend a day maybe between the two of us contacting people, making sure they were the right fit and pulling that all together. And we'd go back to them 24 hours later and they'd say, oh, we've changed our mind. And so that was like...
Drives me crazy. Insane.
Bananas, yeah. yeah. And yeah. we had about 2 weeks where that happened like, you know, five or six times a week. And it was just soul destroying.
So you decided to charge them.
We decided to introduce a search fee. So we introduced a search fee of €250. And that just sort of, it just got rid of the tire kickers. And it meant that we stopped being busy fools and we were able to concentrate on high payoff activities. So the customers that deal with us now are really, really serious about securing top talent as a short-term solution without having to go through the whole rigmarole of permanent recruitment and so on. And they're happy to pay a 250 search fee because they know they're going to get quality out the other end and they're going to get it fast. We don't charge a search fee if we've got nobody on the list. So if somebody comes to us and says, I'm looking for a unicorn, we'll go, okay, well, there's €250
fee. I know where they're a unicorn.
So obviously we won't charge if there's absolutely no way of us, you know, delivering on the brief. But if we believe that we have people who meet the brief, we will charge the €250, regardless of whether the customer goes ahead with an engagement or not.
Okay, and then?
And then 10% on top of the fee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you internationalize this?
Totally. Absolutely. We're getting more and more sign-ups actually from abroad, which is brilliant because our customer base here in Ireland are really looking for diversity of thinking, particularly those who work in the advertising industry. A lot of our customers would be advertising agencies who need to kind of get people for project work. They're looking for a sort of diverse experience. So certainly we're looking for people to sign up outside of Ireland. Can it go? Can we extend the business to international customers? Absolutely. You know, the world is our playground for this idea. But we really want to just make it work in Ireland first before we take on the world. When we started this business, we actually were a little bit naive. We didn't know how big this world was, this freelance revolution. Our eyes have just been opened up in the last 9 months. And I'm actually really glad we didn't know as much as we know now, because I don't think we would have done it. I think we would have been spooked.
It's a bit like jumping into cold water.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's terrifying and exhilarating. It wasn't terrifying at all setting up the indie list. It was the best experience of my life actually so far, because it came from a good place. It came from a desire to help. It was all pro bono for the first 6 weeks. And then reality kicked in. I couldn't afford to keep on doing it. But that sort of, that founding principle is very much a kind of a, it's like a North Star for us. We want to be able to add value to our community. We want to be able to provide choice for our customers. One of the things that we're concentrating on now is building out the community elements to the indie list for our community. When I went freelance myself back in 2005, I loved it, but you know, it's not for everyone. It can be a lonely place. Networking can be really tough. And sometimes you just need people to kind of tell you it's going to be okay and, you know, not to worry too much about
it. That's why we're here. That is Team GBS. That's why we're here. We are like the scrum. We put our arms around you and we drive you forward. So what could Team GBS do for you?
So, we see our big customer base being SME Ireland, businesses that are doing really well, but could do better by maybe a sort of an enhanced management of their brand, of their marketing function, but are probably held back from doing that because they see it as being a very onerous undertaking, very costly. They may not necessarily have the need to be going to a big advertising agency or a big management consultancy firm. We have 500 people, all of whom work for themselves, who are vetted by us. We can put them into individual roles for short periods of time without having any commitment at the customer end. So I suppose what could you guys do for us is to let that community of SMEs in Ireland know about us and to...
Well, after this, they will. Hopefully, and you also can spread the word through your social media.
Absolutely.
Hiring in a heartbeat. Who would you hire in a heartbeat for the indie list?
The person I would hire in a heartbeat would be a really, really good PA. Somebody who would basically keep my fear at bay, because I love going out and making the matches and creating those little magic connections where there's a win for the customer, there's a win for the individual, and then there's a win for us. What I'm really bad at is the admin that piles up on my desk, and then I look at it and go, oh my God, the accountant is going to be on to me now any minute. The bailiff will be at the door.
Who is this PA? I have a woman called Rosemary Reinhardt. She's not for sale. She's too brilliant.
Well, actually, it would probably be somebody like my sister, Mary Marr, who I know will be listening to tomorrow. She is great at keeping me on my toes, but I'd probably drive her insane. So she'd probably be far too rich for my blood.
You know, other people have chosen people like Jeff Bezos. You could have actually gone.
I could have gone really big, but the thing about it is, if you know, for us to really get this indie list up off the ground and running, I need somebody like the wind at my back who's going to basically pick up all the stuff that I just do really badly.
That's very honest, I suppose. Yeah. That is Una Herlihy. She be the co-founder of the indie list herself and Peter McPartland. So thank you so much for joining us Great Business Show.
That Great Business Show.
Remember, That Great Business Show is only possible because we are backed by that great shaving oil company called De Facto. Made in Mayo, De Facto is as great for men and women. That's why they say it's the best anyone can get. Shaving foam pollutes because it can't be recycled. And that's why Monaghan McGann in the Irish Times recommended making one small switch to shaving oil. Like De Facto, good for your skin, good for the planet.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favourite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
If, like me, you're nosy about businesses, then the Renatus newsletter, emailed to their huge mailing list on lunchtime Sundays, is a must-read. It synopsizes the latest deal activity, company performance and people moves. And my own favourite bit is where they take the accounts from random businesses and show what their margins are. Something that can often raise an eyebrow or two, certainly with me. Renatus is a curious business, a kind of an alternative investor in that they invest in businesses on their own account. And here to tell me more is Philip Gardner, who's an associate director with Renatus. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Philip.
Thanks very much for having me, Cole.
Am I right in saying that you're curious business because you invest? You're not just a straightforward investor in businesses.
No, I mean, our model in Renatus is a partnership-led model. So we do take equity investments and we do take shareholdings, and we partner and rank alongside the founders of the business. But we believe we bring more than just the capital and the cash side of things, and that's proven through in the businesses that we've partnered with to date. So we'll take a board seat on in the business, and we won't work day to day with the management teams, but we'll certainly help them at a board level. And where we can bring assistance, be it bringing new people into the team if there's expertise needed, introducing them to new customers, helping them prepare plans to enter into new markets, we can bring an awful lot of value add there.
Maybe it's peculiar to Ireland because we don't have big sectors in certain areas. You've got a big spread in the investments that you have made.
We do. I mean, it's an eclectic mix. We're not focused, and I think you're right. It is the size of the market in Ireland that you can't afford to be a sector specialist. So inside of our portfolio across our two funds, we've got a chain of Mexican restaurants. We've got a pilot training business. We've got a business that distributes the reflective material on car license plates. We've got a business that manufactures and rents out refrigeration units. And we've got a software business that runs the till systems in large stadiums and education. So, you know, a real mix.
Who funds Renatus?
We're backed by a group of high net worths, family offices, and our only institutional investor is the Irish Strategic Investment Fund. So we have a 40 million euro fund, mostly made up of individuals and families that have created wealth.
And you have been investing recently again. Did you do two more investments?
Yeah, so we completed from our second fund, the current fund that we're investing from, we completed our first investment from that in the summer. In August, we invested into CRS Refrigeration, a mead-based business.
How would you find a business like that? Well, nothing wrong with it. Yeah, just wondering.
I mean, if you saw where this business is located, Google Maps struggles to find the fabrication facility. It is right in the middle of Normandy, but it is a fantastic business. And it's kind of, to your earlier point of you enjoy seeing the margins of these random businesses coming through in a newsletter, CRS is a business that you'd never have heard of. but they provide a vital service to the customers that they work with.
We love those kind of businesses. They are clever, you know. They just find a niche and work them.
Yeah, and they work it great. So they fly under the radar. CRS, and similar to a lot of businesses that we speak with, their first point call is to speak to an advisor and discuss what their options are, depending on what they're looking to do. Does a shareholder want to exit? Do they have plans for growth and they need additional investment to do that? Is somebody looking to retire? And they'll speak to their advisor, typically their corporate finance advisor, and discuss their options. And that's at that point then that we come in.
So that's where your connection is. You are obviously not an accountancy firm, but you obviously are very, very well connected across.
Yeah. Yeah. So we spend a lot of time to, you know, meeting the advisor around town.
And emailing them.
And how many
people do you email?
Oh, we would have north of 10,000 on our list at this stage.
It's fantastic.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great for us.
And I presume we get a tremendous reaction to it.
We do. It's, you know, we have an awful lot of pen pals that we've built up from it. You know, businesses like seeing their names in it. Businesses like seeing their customers in it. And there's a lot of engagement that we have back and forth with the business community as a result of the newsletter. And it's really great for us.
I know that the newspaper, you used to synopsize the newspapers and they give out to you. I'm actually surprised that the newspapers don't do what you do, because it's there to be done. And you correctly say, the advisors, not alone is it nice for their egos, but if they're doing good business, why not give them a name check?
They should. I mean, they're the driving force behind the deals. The businesses that transact get the headlines, but the advisors drive it.
They actually put in the hard work.
They do. And it's interesting. People are, I think, digesting news in shorter pieces. Mm-hmm. And a long article versus a short snippet. I mean, most people are going to pick the short snippet. It's the easier option. It won't have the same depth of detail, but it gives the headlines. And there's a model there where, you know, you give them the short snippet, you link it back into the bigger article. And maybe it's a model that the papers will look at.
So your fridge or freezer company, that they came through some advisor. What was the second investment that you made?
We invested into a Derby, UK-based software development business.
Where would you find a Derby, UK software development business?
Through an Irish advisor, strangely enough.
I love this.
Yeah, there was an Irish connection there. They had an Irish advisor appointed to help raise funding.
In the UK?
The advisor was Dublin-based.
Okay.
The business was based in the UK. They have a development team in Galway, which brought back that connection. And they felt that the Irish advisor was best placed to help them raise the funds.
And you love them so much that you had to buy a bit of them.
We did. We invest into majority stake in the business. We will bring a chairman in to help grow the business. But the business really, it's a business called Capture. They develop the software that runs the till terminals. And the guys there have nailed the product. I mean, their customers are Croke Park or Twickenham, Royal Ascot. And really what they're looking to do now is to grow. And they need a partner with expertise that they don't currently have in the team, but also cash to help them expand.
There must be some sectors you say we will never invest in that area.
We're very open-minded. There's few sectors that we'd say we'd never do if the right team with the right story came. And that for us is key. Particular sectors can have their own particular challenges, but super talented people with the right plan will succeed in them. So we're quite open-minded. We'll have sectors where we'll find it. We'll have a higher barrier that we need to get comfortable with.
How long does it take from meeting with you before you might invest in a company?
It ranges. I mean, if the company's well-prepared, and that's where the good advisor is key. If the company's well prepared, we have had from initial meeting to shaking hands on terms, the shortest that we've done so far is about 6 weeks.
That's not bad, really, yeah.
No.
And what quantum of money might that involve?
We don't invest anything less than 2 or 3 million.
Because you are looking for not early stage companies at all. You're looking for, did I read that you need a profit of 1 million or a minimum?
Profit of 1 million plus. So we'll invest between 2 and 10 million of equity into a business. So we'll take a shareholding as opposed to giving a loan. So that typically means in Ireland, they're later stage businesses. It's not seed or venture capital where the business isn't making cash and it's just reinvesting every year for growth. The businesses that we typically back they're making 1 million plus of profits each year and good cash coming off those profits. And they have a plan to grow.
Now, there's nothing wrong with 40 million, but it is still in relative terms internationally, a very small fund.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, we are one of the smaller funds.
And do you struggle to raise cash for yourselves as into the fund?
No, I mean, we spoke to a lot of people to get the right mix of investors, but there was an awful lot of people willing to invest in. I think they see the opportunities in SME Ireland and the ability to back good businesses. And it's difficult to find good businesses, and it's difficult to screen and to get through it.
When you're screening, it puts a smile on my face.
Yeah.
What are the scams that you're finding? I remember the late Dr. John Hogan. He was the head of research in Real Estate Stockbrokers, where I used to work. Mm. He knew the ins and outs of every business. And he'd say, check this out, watch this one, do that. Oh, I love that man so much because of his insights.
Yeah. Every business, it's very easy to develop a business plan that's going to show that hockey stick growth. You know, it's going to be every year, doubling every year. The difficult part is to sift through and see what's realistic. What's realistic to the market it's operating, what's realistic to the product range they have, the competitive advantage they have, and the team's ability to deliver it. I mean, we'd have a feel for what an average margin should be in typical industries. If somebody's way above that, you kind of need to dig deeper to see, is this right? And maybe it is. And if it is, they're the businesses we want to back.
And well, I see those popping up on your newsletter. I should say to people who are listening, your newsletter is free and for nothing. They can sign up for it anytime they want.
For sure.
And it's Renatus, RENATUS.ie.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly it's my Sunday lunch special.
If you have any interest in businesses being bought or sold or what's happening in that side of the business world, it's a must read on a Sunday.
And as I say, that you also very kindly give up, and I presume people choke on their Sunday lunches when they see the margin on their businesses being highlighted and say, get that off. Do you ever get that kind of pushback or feedback, or people say, get me off your list or get me off your analysis?
We haven't. And it's because it's publicly available. I mean, if you go onto the company's house, the companies are publishing their margins. I'm sure there's loads of businesses when they're negotiating with customers, and the customers are seeing what margin they're making, that they don't want that to be out in lights. But there's a lot of companies that are proud of it.
And there are, like, typically there are margins between, I don't know, between 5 and 12%. But when it gets over 12%, I start suddenly, just like you're saying, you have to kind of dig in and say, I wonder what's going on there now.
Fair play to them.
Well, that is true. That is true. What will or what can Renatus do in the future?
So our plan is to keep going with our model, which is finding super talented teams with good business plans that are looking to grow and looking to grow faster with a partner than they could do on their own. And we're generous in the sense it's not a particular sector. We're very open. So our plan is to continue to back. You know, we'll make 3 or 4 more investments in this fund, and we'll support the management teams that we partner with.
And will that be it, or do you fund again? Or
if we do our job right, and we're creating good value for our own shareholders, then yeah, we definitely want to raise another fund. We think that there's really deep opportunities in Ireland to keep providing this source of finance. If there is a real need when you look at the source of finance in Ireland and how businesses should be financed, there is a real need to have a good mix of debt and equity. And we think equity plays an important part of a business's finance decision.
Well, I would speak to an awful lot of accountants during the week, and they seem to be a bit of, they do love you. I don't know, is that because you name check them or something? There is an awful lot of goodwill.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it comes from maybe from the newsletter a bit also.
Such a simple idea. I say, I do not understand why everybody's not doing it, but you've done it and it's fantastic.
Because it's hard work.
Tell me about the work.
Well, my wife won't be happy about this, but the day after our engagement party, so the way we used to work the newsletter was every Sunday morning, we'd each have a day where I'd be on this week, Mark be on next week, one of your guys be on the following week, and we'd take all the papers and we'd review them. And it was a 7 or 8 hour stint. And we tried to get out.
It was very comprehensive.
It was.
And that's why the newspapers didn't really like you, because I didn't have to buy any newspapers.
It may be. And what we tried to do is get out early, because we knew the man hours involved. If we got out early, it stopped other people from doing the same thing.
And what is early?
We were trying to get out by about 11, 12 o'clock.
Oh, that's when you would publish it. But what time were you starting to review?
6, 7 o'clock.
Oh, good man.
So the night after my engagement party, we had we were living in a one-bed apartment at the time. My wife was in the bedroom. My sister was on a blow-up mattress in there. I had a couple of friends in a blow-up mattress in the living room. The only place I could do the papers was sitting in the hallway in between everything. But the hard work pays off. I mean, it's part of, we see ourselves as a kind of startup business in itself. So, you know, we need to hustle and grind and put in the hard work to build our brand and reputation.
You have obviously looked at a load of businesses. Do you ever get tempted to say, God, I wouldn't mind jumping on board that one there?
For sure. I mean, if you're in private equity, you need to have an entrepreneurial itch. My background before I joined the guys was in banking. And my frustration was that I was always one or two steps too far removed from the business. You know, you do a good deal, you provide a good loan, but that's it then. Somebody else is going off and doing it. So the ability to work directly with the businesses through private equity and still do the interesting financing investment piece was kind of tickled my itch. But there's been businesses we've seen where, yeah, you can see real opportunities.
That's a big margin and it's got huge growth potential. I could jump.
Yeah, but we've backed those businesses. So we've get involved by partnering with them and providing them with that equity capital. So we get involved just through our own way.
And that is the Renata's way. There is, and it always probably will be, because it's the nature of business, a shortage of capital for business. It doesn't matter which form it takes. Would you agree?
At the moment, I'm not sure. I mean, there's an awful lot of capital available in the market. The challenge
is, it doesn't seem to come out anywhere. Like, capital costs are zip at the moment. You saw the government was borrowing at minus at the moment.
I did.
Like, when I went to college, the textbooks said this was not possible.
Yeah, the challenge is finding the right type of capital for the business at its point in time. If you're a startup company and you haven't got cash, it's very difficult to raise capital.
Yeah.
If you've got a company and you've got one customer, and that's it, your entire business reliant on one customer.
That ain't going to happen either.
It's very tough. The challenge is getting the right mix. So I know you've had the invoice financing guys on. That's the right source of capital for somebody that has a really good customer book and they need to release some value from that. Or a business that's looking to invest in a property. There's a senior debt finance facility for that. Or a business that's looking to do a little bit something a little more speculative where they won't get a loan from the bank because it's too risky. Then we become a possible partner because we provide the equity. There's no repayment term. And we share in that risk. So depending on the circumstance, I think there's an awful lot of sources of capital. The challenge is speaking to the right people that match your needs.
And getting it at the right price.
But that price...
I think it was Michael Smurfit who used to say about equity was blood and he wasn't going to give it away. Yeah,
it's going back to the field. I mean, you just don't want to give away the land. It's interesting over the last... we launched Renata 7 years ago and the conversations we were having with business owners 7 years ago and the conversations we're having today are quite different because there's been a better understanding about the value that a private equity investor brings. So yes, you're giving away a share of your business today, but it's on the hope and the expectation and the proven case studies that you're going to have a much bigger business in a few years' time. So do you want to keep full share of a smaller business or a smaller share of a much bigger business?
And you know, though, that the other thing that people, the talk is that private equity firms will also, if you don't perform for them, that you're out the door as well. So they are vulture-ish. Now, you're not going to say, oh yeah, I'm a vulture.
I think there's a misconception on that.
of course.
I think there's bad case studies that paint, they're nice to tell stories about, but I don't think that's the case across the market in general. I mean, we've had, I suppose we'd look at when you take in a private equity investor, it's kind of like getting married. You need to be comfortable that through the good times and the bad times, those partners are going to stay with you. And I think across the board, in a general sense, I think that's the case for most private equity. There is guys for sure that are way more aggressive and cutthroat. But I don't think that's the whole industry.
No, but it's part of it, all right. Hire in a heartbeat. Mm. What nice person would you like on the Renata's team? To soften you guys up.
To soften us up. I know you're giving me the heads up on this one. It's a question. I mean, the easy fab answer is you take a Michael O'Leary or
do you actually want to work with Michael O'Leary? He's BFing and blinding at you all day long.
It depends what you want to do. I mean, do you want to be successful? He has a way of doing it that doesn't mix well with everyone. The closer to home, so when we back businesses and people that I've met that have been the most successful in the businesses and that they've been involved in, the common thing is they've got really strong values, personal values, and those translate into the culture. And the five CEOs that we've backed in the businesses that we've partnered with.
I would take any one of them in a heartbeat. That's only talking, as we used to say, talking your own book. Give me one person.
Just give me one person that you would hire
in a heartbeat.
The one person, so David Maxwell, he's the CEO of Boojum. And if you look at what that business has achieved in the last 12 months, its success and its ability to trade through,
Tell the world about Boojum.
Boojum is its Mexican burrito restaurant.
Young men seem to love it.
And women, mix. Yeah,
I see young men queuing. Which
is bonkers. Yeah. I mean, the idea
that's very good. Don't say bonkers. David won't love you. He won't join your team.
It's got a very loyal following in customers. But what David's done with that business over the last 12 months in the challenging times has been all down to, you know, the loyalty he's instilled in the staff and his loyalty to the staff. And it's been inspirational to watch the business survived and thrived.
David into for a chat.
He's brilliant.
Well, we'll have David. David Maxwell, you have to come in for a chat on That Great Business Show. Can you go international with Boojum?
Yes, we can.
Great. Love hearing those stories. So that's your hire in a heartbeat. And that is Philip Gardner of Renatus. Thanks so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. Anybody who wants a really good read on a Sunday morning, renatus.ie, sign up for that newsletter. And as I say, we love the F word, free. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 27, believe it or not. Starring on sound today was Keith Starrs, our sound engineer par excellence. Peter Rice adds some further magic later, making us, and it's official, the best sounding podcast by far. This week's shout outs are for De Facto's boss, Tom Murphy, who told us about Patrice Butler and FIFO. Robin Keelahan sent us details about Onate. My old Today FM boss, Peter McPartland, emailed me about the Indie List, and I'm claiming Renatus as Sunday. Wouldn't be Sunday without a read of their newsletter. And I don't get paid for that, you know that. If you know any other great businesses that deserve to be highlighted on thatgreatbusinessshow.com, go straight to the website and click that Share Your Story button. And remember, on the next episode of That Great Business Show, episode 28, that is, we'll have one of my own favourite business persons and a really great fun person, Dr. John Teeling, who will talk to us about drink, drugs, diamonds, and God knows what else that he has either invested in or wants to invest in, because there is no end to what he knows about. Finally, our thanks to our sponsor, David, De Facto Shave. Try their world's best shaving oil for a week, and I swear you will never, ever go back to the horrid old shaving foam. Buy it online now and tell me what you think. And it's from me, Conal O'Moran. We will talk again next week on That Great Business Show. Slán tamall.